I think it's important just to point your compass towards joy.
And play like you, be like you, and don't overthink it.
Oh my God. Oh, there he is. Whoa.
Hi.
What's up,
buddy? Look at my situation is so amateur looking compared to you guys.
Well, we're not joining you on your podcast, so that's okay. If this was your podcast, this would be weird if your two guests were all studio lighted up.
Fair enough.
Good to see you, buddy.
How you doing, mate?
I'm doing good. Good to see you guys too.
Yeah, man. What are you drinking, matcha or coffee?
I will be drinking coffee as soon as Lindsay brings it to me.
Nice, man.
Nice. Fair play.
Although I will say I did do like three different servings of matcha with the matcha set that you gave me, Mike, at home. I was just like ripping it up.
Nice, man.
That was like the first time that I had done it where I hadn't touched the whisk to the bottom of the bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, and actually when you, I feel like if you have a good whisk and you're conscious of that, it foams up great and is incredible. So
totally. Yeah. I mean, I still kind of give a little side swipe just in case there's anything hanging on to the edges, but, yeah. And it depends on the bowl too. The bowl that we're putting in that kit is really, really smooth. So it's not going to grind up the whisk too bad. Some bowls are really gritty. And then the whisk is gone, but I'm glad you like it, man. I'm glad you got some use out of it. So, all right. Well, we are recording. We've got a live audience. So we'll get some questions from them. There's a grip load of people in the chat. So welcome in for those that are listening. Welcome into Drum with Mike and Eddie. This is a podcast where we kind of explore the mental side of being an artist, the emotional side of being artist, all the ups and downs that we all go through. No matter who says what, no one is protected from imposter syndrome, from thinking themselves into a frenzy about whether they should be doing this, whether they should make this a profession, all of those things. But this week's episode is all about building company culture and customer culture. And Eddie and I both deal with different sides of that. And our guest today, Kyle Stillman, deals with other sides of that that we don't deal with, and he is the owner and the founder of Sociology. Would we call it Sociology Coffee Bar?
Yeah.
Is that the full name?
That's the full name. Actually, LLC is the full name.
Hello. So.
There you go.
Sociology Coffee Bar, LLC. So Kyle is joining us, and Kyle he's a neighbor. His sociology is in the same building as the Mike's Lesson Studio. And it's just been something that Eddie and I gravitated to. We have many, many, many options here in Old Folsom. And we just kind of gravitated to this place. And then my camper started gravitating towards this place. And it became a magnet for literally everyone in Folsom. And there's intangible reasons for that. And we need to get into that. So briefly, can you give us your history? Because in all honesty, I don't know your history.
Yeah, so I've spent most of my adult life being in creative, doing video and design, photography, stuff like that, and kind of just having that be something that I am, like, I've never taken courses or anything like that. I just have looked up on YouTube how to do things. Early on in the Vimeo days, they had a bunch of tutorials on how to use DSLR cameras. I learned how to do that. Yeah. And so I've been doing that for a long time. Lindsay, my wife, is also the owner of Sociology. So she, this is just not her thing, not at all. So she, I was like, hey, do you want to be on a podcast too? She was like, no, thank you. yeah, so we're originally from the Bay Area. And then we lived in Portland up until the end of 2019. We lived in Portland for about 7 years. And doing creative in a city like that, you fall in love with coffee culture, cafe culture.
Sure.
And Lindsay and I, ever since we've been married, we've kind of had that dream of like, what if we started a, you know, storefront, brick and mortar, something like bakery, ice cream, coffee shop, whatever. And during the pandemic we moved down here right before the pandemic to be with family. And then the pandemic hit. And my job was already remote. I was doing my own freelance stuff. And then I was working communications for a nonprofit that's based out of the Bay Area. And I was like, now's the time. Like, we need to just, if we want to do this, we need to do this, because the everything is primed for this moment right now. Like, the risk is all there, but it's also like no risk, because it's the pandemic and things could fail really easily, and it could just be like, forget about it. Or it could be like, oh, this was really great. So yeah, we started doing coffee at the farmer's market over by our building, yeah. And just on Saturdays. And then as we slowly did that, like, people are so incredibly gracious with their time and their money and their like hopes and dreams for you when you're getting started. And so we just felt really encouraged by this city and the people in it and the culture of like, hey, like, thank you for bringing great coffee to Folsom.
Right.
And so it just slowly built from there. And so we, like 3 months into doing coffee at the farmer's market, we found a bar that was like just shut down for the pandemic. And we asked them if we could rent their space, just a little corner of their bar, to sell coffee out of. And they were privy to that. So we dove in and did that for about a year, and then got into our own space last October 2021. And it's been having fun ever since. So.
Okay. Well, first of all, you would have to have been here during camps when Kyle had the original spot to know how just ballsy that was, because it was literally, it's not only is it a bar, it's a bar attached to an escape room, attached to an axe throwing place that no one goes to. And like,
the axe throwing place?
Yeah.
The one that's on the,
it's, yeah,
so what, yeah. You served coffee out of there?
Under, like in the basement of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
wait, the bar was shut, but they allowed you to sell coffee from it.
Yeah. So they basically, this is huge space that used to be like an old, because it's all railroad based in historic Folsom. And so this was like a place where they worked on trains in the gold, country era. And then they turned it into a hardware store, and it had been a hardware store for a number of years. So it's this huge space, just like lots of stores and stuff like that. And then finally, this guy who did a lot of remodels and stuff bought it, turned it into a bar. And they had all these different rooms, so they turned them into escape rooms. But we were just in the end of the bar space. So there's like three stories to this thing. It's pretty intense.
Yeah. So I can't picture it at all. It feels like a secret club. Knock four times, give a little wink, yeah. Say the code word.
There's two huge wooden doors that open up. Like that was kind of a secret club.
Right. Yeah, and I remember we would, basically one of the guy that the other Kyle that runs the co-working space, he's like, oh man, you got to check out sociology and take your campers over there. And I was like, okay, cool. And I thought it was like a full restaurant. And we go over there, and there's Kyle behind literally like a podium, not even a desk, like a podium that you would make a speech at. And he's like, can I take your order? And I'm like, what is this? And I think that that's why the town has gotten so behind what sociology has become, is because it was a guy standing behind like a little piece of wood saying, can I take your order? Here's my menu. But this is where things kind of take a change especially for any of our listeners that want to become entrepreneurs, want to start a business. Where things take a change is small menu, but whatever was on there was amazing. And whatever was on there didn't come with any arrogance. It didn't come with any, pretense. It was just like, we do a few things, but we do them really well. And when you over deliver on anything, then that just kind of buys you trust of like, well, I've only ordered two things, but they both blew me away. And then you would slowly start adding things to the menu, and we'd come back to that same place with the next group of campers. We'd all get our iced matchas. And for those that don't know, there was no staff. So Kyle was there whisking up 8 bowls of matcha, trying to like make sure the ice didn't melt in time, because it's 110 degrees out when I'm having my camps. So, I mean, just talk me through that. Did you feel crazy at the time? Did you feel like this is the dream? This is on the way to the dream? What were the feelings?
It was a roller coaster of all of that. I think, honestly, we were so slow at the beginning of me doing that I would sell a coffee, and then I would go work my job at my computer and like wait for another person to show up.
Wow.
And
talk about just, hustling.
Yeah. I mean, because it did feel like the dream, honestly. It felt like having these interactions with people, having the ability to actually connect face to face, especially when you're a graphic designer, like you talk to your clients and then that's kind of it. But yeah, for me to be able to actually have face-to-face conversations with people, it really did feel like, man, this is what Lindsay and I are supposed to be doing.
Wow.
So we had days where we sold $40 worth of coffee and I would go home and be like, I don't think this is going to work. And
really?
And then we'd have a Saturday where it was like, oh, we're having, oh, sorry. I think my music is playing on my headphones. There we go. and then we'd have days where it was like people would show up and we'd have $200-$300 in sales and feel like that was incredible. And then just that would keep us going for the next few days where we sold no coffee, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it did feel a little crazy. We had people tell us we were crazy. But Lindsay and I are believers, man. I feel like we just felt like, look, we're either, she actually told me one time I came home and it was a really discouraging day. And I said, Lindsay, I don't know if this is for us. Like, we're not actually making any money doing this. I'm not going to ever be able to pay myself doing this. And she said, like, she called me out like a bro, you know, she's like, look, I'm not going to be honest. Every other day you come home and you're excited, then you're not. Like, we're either doing this or we're not. And I was like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
You're right.
And
yeah.
That was kind of the moment where we were like, all right, we're doing this and I want to do this. So let's make it work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was there any point in time where you found like not thinking was just as good as like actually being smart and putting everything together? Like, cause I feel like people who have their own businesses, especially like brick and mortar stores, like what blows my mind about physical locations, especially for a cafe, like drum teachers, for example, right? You can start a business and you can rent a room off someone else, rent a music shop. You're not really paying for any, you're not committing to anything. You're just paying for what you use and the time you use. For what you do, you have to sign a lease for like 4 or 5 years or whatever, not knowing if you actually have any customers coming through the door. And that to me is the situation where like, if I did that, and that's something that me and Luke are thinking about in Paragon, actually not thinking makes it a hell of a lot easier. Because if you think about it, it's one of those things where you're like, well, I'll never do that. How can I commit to paying X amount of rent for 5 years when I don't even know if anyone's going to come through the door? Like, that's kind of scary. Do you know what I mean? So did you find at any point like just turning your brain off was just easier?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, honestly. I think when you start to think through like, all right, I see this happening over here across town. Can I do that? Like, you'll think yourself out of it, mm-hmm. you know? And I think just being able to, like I said before, like Lindsay and I being big believers that if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, then the finances are going to come, the relationships are going to come, like it's going to be fulfilling. And so it is that, Eddie, it really was like, you know, don't overthink it, like get through this day and make sure that you did your absolute best through this day. And then you'll wake up tomorrow and do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. Wow. So how long were you in, sorry if you mentioned it, how long were you in the secret club dungeon, whatever you want to call it, before you got the lease for the new place, for the actual building that I know and that most of all the campus have been to? Like, and how, I guess more importantly, like, when did you apply for that lease? And how long did it take to get it? Was there enough time for you to think, overthink it and get out of it? Or did you just apply for it, got it, and you were in?
So I'll try to keep the history brief about it because it is rather long. When we were at the farmer's market, we got into the bar space thinking we were probably only going to be in there for a few months and then we would launch into something else. And like you, Mike, you mentioned the other Kyle who owns the co-working. We had been working with him. He's always got his eye on open spaces and stuff. So we were like, all right, let's work with him and he can help us kind of find the right spot. And it, you know, month after being in the bar space and things not happening and us looking at a space after space after space and it just being like, it's not right. I mean, we looked at everything in the historic district. We looked at everything available in Folsom. We really believed for our business and what we wanted to, like the aesthetic that we wanted to put out there and the vibe we wanted to put out there, that the historic district was the right place for it. So we were really like, let's try and find the historic. But we were going to get into the space that we're in right now, like March of 2021. And then it fell through. There was just like contract miscommunications and stuff. And we were super bummed and thought like, all right, well, we need to look somewhere else. Or again, like having those conversations, like maybe this isn't going to actually pan out, but just stuck with it and never actually thinking like maybe we'll actually be in that same spot, but just kept pushing and kept grinding, selling coffee through the bar space and kept trying to find somewhere else, but then also kept investigating this one spot.
Yeah.
And finally we did our due diligence and we made the contracts work. And so we actually signed a lease, like the end of September of 2021.
Okay.
We closed for a week, the first week of October, and then we reopened, the next Monday, like the second Monday in October. And it was just Tyler and I see some of you guys asking about Tyler, like Tyler, is my guy. And it was literally just Tyler and I used to work construction jobs and stuff, and he's done that with his dad. And so we were just remodeling the whole spot like ourselves and spending, you know, like 8 hours making coffee and cooking food. And then we would like have an hour break, have a beer, and then spend 8 hours at night remodeling the spot. Oh, so we had about a week and a half.
Wow.
To turn that spot around. Lindsay's in there painting her guts out. Yeah. Just, I mean, to answer your question specifically, like we did not have a lot of time to think about, all right, like, do we really want to do this? It was like, we're doing this or we're not doing this. And, and like today's the day. So,
well, wow. Okay. So let's get into now the bulk of this topic where the three of us can kind of chat openly about this stuff. But I've been in this space now for almost 13 years, and I have seen probably six businesses come and go out of that spot. And it was never anything like what you had. Like, it was never overly successful. It was always like fanfare on grand opening and then literally slow decline for the next 6 months until they go out of business. And I think when you took it over, it must have been Heckle, I would assume. Or it was like a brewery, not brewery, like a microbrew pub. Before that, it was a Lebanese restaurant. Before that, it was something else. Before that, it was a sushi restaurant. I've seen everything. And it's tough to make it there. But when you put so much into vibe, when you put so much into culture, so much into experience rather than just the product, like we always talk about with drumming, there's nothing to talk about when it comes to drumming. You have to be good. You being good means nothing. Everyone's good. So the drumming is the least important part of being a professional musician because everyone's amazing. It's all the other stuff. And so for me, you having amazing food, that's great. It's wonderful. There are other restaurants in town. You having amazing matcha or teas, fantastic. There's other in town. It's everything else that matters. And I think that's why it has exploded to the point that I come up there at least once every day and leave almost 50% of the time because I can't get in. It's like a cool kid club. I'm like, dude, how is this so packed at 3:26 in the afternoon? Like
And then it makes you want to go back because you can't
totally. Because I'm like, I just need to be seen in line. Maybe somebody will take my picture if I'm in line in sociology. I just want to be seen.
You go there for the clout. Do you know what I mean? You just go to the story and then you walk away.
I don't even buy anything. I'm just like, here's some money. Like, I just wanted to show up and tip because I wanted to be seen at the club. So my question is, when you were at the bar and working out of there, you had the vibe personally, but the place itself only had the vibe of your surroundings. It wasn't up to you. Was this a conscious decision to say, okay, we're creating a specific type of environment? And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I saw your recent pilgrimage to Southern California, and it literally looked like you did recon on the greatest coffee shops. And instead of feeling competition from them, you went and took inspiration from them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we being in the bar space, we had a lot of people that actually like were like, oh my God, I love the vibe in here. And every time I said that, I'm like grateful, but I'm like, this is not like they don't understand. This is not what we're going to do.
Right.
And especially like Lindsay, she's like a design, like she's just like a creative engine. And so I didn't even know necessarily. I just trusted her, like what the vision is for the space. As far as the aesthetic and all that, I was like, Lynn's like, I believe you're going to do the right thing for our shop. And so when we finally were in talks to get into our own space, people were like, well, you know, like you're going to lose like a really great space. Like maybe you guys should just make it work out in the bar. And I was like, nah, like we got it. Like, yeah. And not arrogantly, but just like nobody's even seen yet what we want to do.
Right.
Like they've seen the coffees, they've seen the front of the cart, but they haven't seen us.
Right.
And so, yeah, we honestly, it was a huge conscious decision to just be like, don't look kind of your point, Eddie, about not overthinking. It was like, don't look at this coffee shop that's doing a great job, or don't think about, oh, I really want to recreate this Portland shop or anything like that. But it was literally just like, what's in our veins, what's in our blood, and if we cut that open, what does it look like in the shop?
Wow.
And that's what we did. And I feel like, to your point, Mike, about being a good drummer, like everyone, like there's specifications for good coffee. Like you have to follow them if you're going to be a legit shop. So we're following those specifications. You can get great coffee in, I could name right now half a dozen spots just in Folsom in a town of 80,000 people. Like that's a lot of coffee saturation. So the coffee has to be good, but nobody can do coffee the way we're doing it because they aren't doing it. We're doing it.
Right.
And so 100%. It's that unique, that thumbprint that we can put on the coffee world and just say like, this is us. Like this isn't some other shop that we're trying to recreate. This isn't some other vibe we're trying to recreate. And you know, if you try to create a space where you genuinely just want to love people and help them feel like that was the most awesome part of my day, walk away with a coffee and like, not just energy from caffeine, but energy feeling like somebody knows my name, somebody cares that I'm alive.
Right.
That's the vibe that we wanted to create.
Awesome, man.
Yeah. Well, you did, mate. Yeah. Every time we're in there, and Mike's like, cool, right, let's go back down for class three. I'm like, do we have to?
Can we just stay? Do you know here? What I
mean? Can we just chill?
Well, there's a reason why in my normal camps, our first class is actually at sociology. I mean, we usually have our orientation, let me get to know you, tell me what you want out of drums. We usually have that at sociology. And you know, that's because that is a vibe. That, well, one, the sociology vibe is such a different vibe than what I've created here. I think the commonality is the acceptance, the positivity, the support. No one goes into sociology feeling like they're not cool enough to order coffee. They're not cool enough to ask about, you know, I mean, a lot of my students obviously are going to ask about matcha, but they feel comfortable doing that because Tyler's there or Nathan's there or Alan's there. By the way, Eddie. Yeah. Alan got the drum with Mike and Eddie $100 prize yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So check this out. So I go up to, this is sociology to a T. I go up there. It's freezing, California freezing. So it's like 90 degrees. It's freezing.
I was gonna say, boiling.
Yeah. I go up there and I come in and I'm a little breathless. And Alan's like, hey man, how you doing? Just typical smile from ear to ear. I order my stuff and I said, oh man, I'm good. I'm just kind of breathless because I literally sprinted the whole way here because it was too cold to walk in it. So I figured if I ran through it, I just got through it quicker. And he's like, oh, cool, man. And then he does his thing, checks me out. We make a couple jokes. I'm like, cool, buddy. I'll be back in like 10 minutes to pick that up. Okay, cool. Come downstairs. I start getting my camera set to film a new course. And then I'm like, oh, I got to go pick up my tacos. And as I come out to the lobby, I just see Alan standing in front of my door with the tacos. And I'm like, And for anybody that doesn't know, it's a flight of stairs. It's, I wouldn't say it's a long walk, but it's a long walk for a guy who's on his shift at the moment. It's long enough to be like, dude, you left your post. And so I come to the door. I'm like, Alan, you didn't have to do that. And he goes, I know, but you said it was cold. And I was like, it's not that cold. So I grab my tacos and I'm like, and for our podcast listeners, they know like during December, I carry a $100 bill with me. I never have money on me ever. But I carry a $100 bill and all I'm doing is waiting for one person in the most chaotic time, which is Christmas time, to over deliver on customer service. And I just, as soon as I got my tacos, I was like, that was the moment. He didn't have to do that. And I sprinted back upstairs. He probably thought I was overly emotional because after the second sprint, I couldn't tell him what I was like, I have a $100 bill. And I was like, here you go. And I just gave him $100 and then I left. But it was like, I just, my cardio is not very good. So anyways, but that to me typifies like, that is sociology to a T. Like, oh, Mike said it was cold. I'll bring his tacos down to him. Like, what? So let's get into this. I want to now jump over a little bit. I know, Kyle, you recently got to experience Eddie's other business, Paragon. And so, Eddie, let's talk about, since you don't have company culture in the way that I would say a Silicon Valley business does, as far as, you know, they've decided, okay, we're going to have, you know, bikes hanging on the wall and people can rent our bikes and we've got wheatgrass shots for everybody. And it's like this big Silicon Valley company culture, Google style thing. It's just you and Luke. So instead, you're similar to me in the fact that all there is, because I have no employees, all there is customer culture. Do you think about that at all? Does it take care of itself just because of the product you're selling? I mean, you're selling cool shoes. Does that mean that all of your customers are cool? How do you manage that? Because you don't want a bunch of jerks being your customers, because then it would look bad on your brand.
Yeah, it's, mate, like what we sell, like high-end products, like they're not really, this is the crazy thing, like not to sound like a scammer or whatever, but they're not really high-end products. The resale value is a lot worth a lot of money. So people are spending a lot of money on a product that, you know, they don't really want to spend the money on, which is kind of crazy. They just want that product.
Yeah.
So they're spending a lot of money on it. So like going into this, starting Paragon and like selling shoes, it's kind of like, you know, what you guys do. You want the experience to be the most important thing. Like what you said, man, like everyone's, like there's a lot of people who sell coffee. There's a lot of people who sell shoes. So like, it's the other things that matter. It's like being a drum teacher. There's a ton of people who teach the drums. What matters is you know, how that person makes you feel at the end of it or through the process. Cause like, you know, that's the thing. Like sometimes the product isn't the actual like good thing. It's the process. It's like wanting to buy it. It's going on the website and then waiting for the shoes to arrive or waiting for your coffee to arrive or whatever. It's everything that happens in between and around it. So I definitely went into this just being like, okay, cool. When someone buys a product online, they're not really choosing like a brand really. They're just looking for price. Like they don't know that along with this purchase, they are going to get something they didn't get before. They're naive to that. So that's why that's what I love about the process. I love surprising people. I love, like, someone just literally ordered a shoe just before we got on this podcast. And on our website, it says like Christmas guarantee has ended. Like, we can't promise that your shoes are going to get there in time because the UK is just in bits at the minute with Royal Mail and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so I called him straight away and I was like, you're right, mate. Thanks so much for ordering. Just letting you know, I will ship your shoes like tomorrow, but can't guarantee, but I will ship them. I'll pay for speedy delivery. And he was just blown away. And I think that's like the difference. Like you, when you're like running a business or whatever, or dealing with customers, is like surprising them or like giving them an experience they didn't even realize they were going to get or expected to get. Do you know what I mean? I think that's, like you said, man, like sociology, that is that. You go in to buy a coffee and you can do that in Starbucks. You can do that at any of the mainstream places. And what you get is a coffee and that is that. Do you know what I mean? And you're very surprised if you get someone that's being conversational or like, or just being really, really polite.
I literally give them $100 if they're nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's so rare. It's so rare. I'm like, dude, I just have this in my pocket for you.
Exactly. And I think it's, so yeah, with Paragon, it's kind of different. People genuinely don't expect it. It's online. It's not face to face. They think clicking checkout is all they're going to feel, all they're going to get. And I love just surprising people, man. I love surprising people. And yeah, it was always about creating a vibe and just creating an experience. Like, I want you to feel like you're buying a shoe off your best mate. And if anything goes wrong, you know, we're here to sort it out. And, you know, so yeah, I think that's one of the most important things you can do. Surprise them, giving them an experience they didn't even realize they were going to get.
Absolutely. Because, you know, the thing is, like, one thing that we all control, Kyle and I have actually talked about this, you know, in DMs before, but we can outcare the competition. You know, I can't promise you that my drum lessons will be better. I can't promise that I'm a better drummer. I can't promise any of that. I can't promise that I'll have the best studio. You know, if somebody says like, well, we're doing our camp at Abbey Road. It's like, okay, dog, I'm doing my best, but I've got like two microphones in a studio in Old Folsom. I can't compete with Abbey Road, but I can control the effort that I put into the care for the experience. And I can always be thinking like, could this experience be better? How, to me, if I sold 1 million drum lessons and no one got better, massive failure. Like, okay, well, one short-term bump financially, it probably feels good on the spreadsheet, but well, if they didn't get better, they're not coming back. And I feel the same, like, you know, we had a place in town before you got here, Kyle, that was a bit of a walk, but it was, they made some of the best food I'd ever had in this town. And they went out of business in 6 months. And all of it was because no care. The customer service, the feeling you got when you walked in there, you honestly felt like you were bothering them to pay them money for their service. And it sucked because you'd get the food and you're like, this is game-changing food. But the feeling I got walking in and the feeling I got walking out just left a pit in my stomach that I don't really want to be a part of. And I think that that's the thing that you offer at Sociology, that, and the reason why, if any of our listeners are wondering, like, why did we bring a guy that runs a coffee shop on? It's because of how analogous it is to what we all do as musicians. The feel, when you go to Sociology, whether you're going for a coffee or the food, whatever, it's the whole thing. After you've gone your first time, the second time you go, it's because of the walk there through Old Town Folsom, the lights, the vibe, coming down the staircase, everyone greeting you when you walk in, the feeling that you're not outcooled by the crowd. Then you get the food or the drinks, and then you leave, and it's a big experience. And I think that we as musicians have the opportunity to do that, as far as we show up early, we have our gear in check, we don't add stress to the situation. Yeah, we're going to play drums for an hour and a half during this cover band set, but when it's all over, the bass player, the singer, the songwriter, the MD is going like, that was a really good experience. They are never going to say, man, he or she was so good on the drums during this, you know, set of 80s Huey Lewis and the News tunes. They're never going to talk about the drumming. They're going to talk about everything other than the drumming. Showed up early, was courteous, was kind to the staff. You know, I mean, imagine hiring a bass player for a cover band set and everything's good. Sound check goes great. And then you just see him yelling at a waiter because he couldn't get the shrimp cocktail without the sauce, you know? And it's like, what? Dude, you're adding stress to our whole night. Now that's going to cast shade on the gig itself. And so that's what I think, like, when I look at Sociology, I just think it's so analogous to us as musicians and us as creatives and artists, as like, the whole package is the thing. The thing that you think is the thing is not the thing. Everyone's got that. It's everything else around it.
Yeah, man. I think it's like, I think it's really positive. I think it's really helpful for anyone who is thinking about starting a business, or even like starting an Instagram page, like starting an Instagram page with you playing drums or filming you make coffee or matcha or whatever it may be. Like, I think sometimes it's so daunting. And like, you know, when you were signing the lease for the shop, Carl, like, you know, there's so many reasons as to not do something. And at the end of the day, it comes down to one thing that doesn't cost any money, which is just care. Do you know what I mean? Care and attention about like what you do and how you do it. That's the only thing, like you said, mate, it's the only thing that truly matters, mate. Genuinely, like, if you care enough, you can make anything work. And that's the things that people are going to remember. And that's the things people are going to feel. Like, I remember, Mike, you always used to say it. It's like people, well, you still say it now. I said it like you passed. I said it like you're not here with us anymore.
My old friend, Mike Johnston, Michael. Used to always say.
Yeah, he always used to say, you know, but like, you know, you always say, you know, they may not, you know, like notice it or see it, but they'll feel it. And I think that's such a good quote, really.
The feeling is everything. When, especially, you know, Kyle, you know, my wife, Arugula Amber, and, you know, she is.
Wait. Is that Rocket?
That is Rocket. Sorry. Rocket Amber for you guys in the UK.
Rocket Amber. All right.
Yeah. We call Rocket Arugula. But she before they offered anything with arugula, like, Amber was really berating the staff. Like, can you just make me an entire salad out of arugula? And they're like, well, what do you want on it? She's like, nothing, just arugula. And then put like a drip of lemon on it and I'm good. So anyways, but Amber is not, you know, she is like somebody that is obsessed with customer service. That's one of the reasons she loves Sociology so much. She really cares about the feeling she gets when she goes into a place and when she leaves a place. I mean, obsessively. That's why she runs customer service for mikeslessons.com, is because I know no one in the world cares as much about customer service as Amber. But she doesn't know the others, the vibe and that type of stuff. And a lot of times she'll say like, why are you doing this? No one will ever see this. They will not know. And I'm like, I know. That's why I'm doing this. They'll feel it. They won't know it. They won't be able to see it. They'll feel it. It's a feeling when they leave. Do you think about that kind of stuff, Kyle? Because, I mean, I feel something when I come there and I feel something when I leave.
Yeah, I mean, to give a little more light to that, our shop name comes from that idea of, so sociology is the study of people, and it's exactly that. Like, people don't really ask about that anymore. But if we're doing our best to make everything about the person that's coming in, then suddenly everything feels so much better. And you might not even know why. It's so intangible, but you're like, oh, this food is really good. Like, our cooks cook great food, but it's excellent because when you get your food at the counter and someone says, thanks, somebody responds back and says, well, you're welcome. Enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's about the person getting it. It's not about like, oh, I got my order done. And so it's just that intangible, like, you can't create an experience that people are going to walk away from feeling different if you don't make it about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's such a big part of all of this. You know, it's been honestly something that has been my ethos for teaching drums since I was a kid, or not since I was a kid, since I was a teenager. When I was a kid and I took drum lessons, the drum teachers, and we don't really have this anymore. Luckily, we don't have this, but we used to just have music store teachers, and they taught out of a curriculum. And no matter what you wanted to do with your life, you were going to buy this book and you had to go through this curriculum. And by the time that I started teaching, I just said, I know it can be done better. And the first thing you can do to improve the one-on-one lesson experience is say, hey, so what are your dreams? Who's your favorite band? Do you not have a favorite band? Who's your mom's favorite band? Your dad's favorite band? What do you want to do with this? I just had a student come in and he's only taking drum lessons because he thinks learning the drums will make him a better singer-songwriter. That's what he wants to do. He wants to write songs. But he's like, but I don't think I can write songs until I understand every instrument from that person's perspective. And so it's like, well, thank you for telling me that, because if you didn't tell me that, I would have taught you like you were trying to become a drummer. We can skip a lot of stuff and we can really fine tune our focus, you know? And I think that that's the thing, is like you said, Kyle, make it about them, make it about the almost this agreement. Like, you've walked in our door. We owe each other the same thing. You want something, we want to give you something. It's a two-way street. Mm. And honestly, when you are happy and when you bring your dishes back up to the counter and just say, hey, that was awesome, it's cool that your staff, especially for how young they are, does take a lot of pride. You can see that, like, even though they might have just been the cashier, they say thank you almost like they cooked the food or like they prepared it. And I've never seen a team vibe like what you've created at Sociology. It's bananas.
Yeah. Mate, talking about team, this is a genuine question that I would ask you in sociology, even off a podcast. So I think what Mike does and what musicians do, we're kind of blessed in a way because we can keep it a one-man show. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure there's things that would make it easier. You know, with Mike, it's Mike and Amber, and I'm sure Mike could employ a video guy or whatever. But for the most part, you can keep it a small team. For what you do, like, employing people is like a necessity. It's like you literally can't and physically can't make sandwiches whilst making coffee, whilst, you know, handing them out, whilst doing all the admin, whilst doing all the taxes and all that other shit. Like, you need people there. When does it get to the point when you actually have to go, right, we need another person involved? Like, because that's something I'm personally going through with Paragon, where it's like, we can do it, but are we the bottleneck in our company? Like, or do we need someone? Is this the time when we should just reinvest in our own business, hire someone, and then we'll grow? It's a really scary thing to do, especially when, you know, you're just starting out, because employing someone, you're giving away X amount a year to someone in the hope that you're going to make more. So when does it get to the point when you have to decide to hire someone, basically?
Yeah. I think the best story that I can give as an example is probably hiring Tyler. We had hired Tyler. Two greases. Oh my gosh. He's the best, right?
Yeah. He's literally a hero to all of our campers.
Yeah, me too. He's a hero to me too. So we were running, Lindsay and I were running the bar by ourselves for a number of months. And then we decided we needed to hire someone to help us on the weekends because it was just getting too busy. So we hired this guy named Joe. He had specialty coffee experience, just like a super great personality, great style. and just fit in well with Lindsay and I. And that was the main thing. So he helped us kind of manage orders and stuff like that. Then we hired Caleb, who, if you guys have been around, you know, you guys know Caleb. Mm-hmm. And same thing, just great vibe, great dude, killer at what he does. But these are both part-time guys. But we realized that if we were going to scale to our own shop, and not just be in the bar, that we needed to add to our program. And that's when we decided we were going to start adding food really seriously. Like, I was doing baked goods in the morning and stuff. But we were like, no, we got to actually add breakfast. Cause when people were coming in during the week, they were like, do you guys have any food? And we're like, no, but you can go to this place or that place. Right. And I was like, but we could do great food. And I know that people would enjoy it. So Tyler, and I connected through a latte art competition, and he was experiencing some dissatisfaction where he was at. We had a chat, we became friends actually. And then, Lindsay and I were like, I'm pretty sure we want to hire Tyler. It's just a matter of, we don't have that money to hire Tyler, because he needed full time.
Yeah.
Was not there. It didn't exist.
Got it.
And we were like, we feel like we need Tyler. And if you guys, I mean, anyone that's listening, or you guys, like, we made the right decision. Like, we needed Tyler, right? Yeah. So that was a great decision for us. But what we did was, we said, okay, we're going to take a big risk. I'm going to stop being the main barista. We're going to hire Tyler full time. I'm going to start cooking all our food, and we're going to add a big breakfast, not a big menu, but we're going to add menu items that will help us increase our ticket value and just increase people's satisfaction. When they walk in, they can get coffee and food. And so that was when we decided, all right, like, this is something we know we need to do. And it was a huge risk, but we did it, and it really paid off. So that was like the first big addition to our team. Since then, we've had some misses. We've had, you know, we've hired people thinking like, all right, we need the labor. We need to, you know, we need them to help out in the kitchen or on the bar or whatever. Those have always been the wrong hires, to be completely honest. When we've just needed somebody to do the job, we've hired the wrong people almost every time. It's only happened to us 3-4 times, but when we've hired for who we feel like this person's going to be on our team, and their work ethic, whether they have prior experience, but if they're like, no, I just want to work hard. Like, I enjoy working hard, and I enjoy being a part of a successful team. We've made the right hires. And that's actually right now our team. I hope none of these people ever need to move on, you know, which is unrealistic.
But
that's where we're at now.
But it comes back to the whole care thing, doesn't it? It's like, that's the thing that matters. They care, and there's just something about them that you want to be associated with, and you want your brand and business to be associated with. Yeah. But it is a scary thing, man. It is a scary thing. Like, I often think that about, you know, a business like yours. It's like, you've got to go, okay, cool, I'm going to pay someone else, and I'm going to take the hit financially, but in the long run, it's going to be beneficial for this company. And man, it's crazy, so mate, go ahead, sorry, no, you go. You know when you get to the end of your sentence and then you're like, I'm done here, I need someone else to step in.
I had your back, bro.
I was like, I'm done, why am I still talking?
I've known you for 111 episodes. I had your back, I was coming in hot with a butter knife, and you threw up some frozen margarine. So what I was going to say is, you know, I'll definitely be coming to you, Kyle. By the way, we're going to jump into some questions from the chat, but I'll definitely be coming to you, Kyle, when we launch Rudimental full time, because this is not something that I'm going to be splitting my time half and half between Mike's Lessons. Mike's Lessons is 90% of my day, 90% of my life. And I won't be able, like, my biggest fear right now with Rudimental, especially because of the hype that's starting to get created, is like, oh, no, don't blow up. I do not want that.
Yeah.
I literally want 3 people to order some matcha, and I do it in my spare bedroom. And so at some point, I'm going to have to hire human beings, which is scary. I've never had an employee, you know?
So scary.
Yeah. So, what's funny is what Eddie said is honestly my biggest concern is, how do I get over giving money to someone else in order to make more money? Like, how do I justify that? How do I quantify that? Literally everything I've ever done my whole life, private drum teaching, studio drumming, touring musician, I do what I do and they give me money for it. And sometimes I get very little money for it, and you're on, you know, kind of broke street and doing the ramen thing. And
still have very crystal clear memories of my car being repossessed. And like, cause I reported it as stolen and they were like, oh, it's not stolen. You just have to pay for it, unfortunately, cause you have a car payment. And I was like, oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Thank you, officer. He's like, yeah, you're going to need to call the collection agency. You don't call the police department. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, but even that was on me. I didn't have to fire an employee. I didn't have to let anybody go. It was like, okay, cool. Things are rough for me right now. Things will be good someday. Whatever. So we'll definitely, Kyle, you and I can connect about that because I think even if it was somebody in literally just doing shipping and receiving, I want the Tyler of shipping and receiving. I want to know that the person that's literally putting the matcha in the box cares as much about it, understands like this is going to a person. This isn't just an order that came through Shopify. This is going to Jason in New Zealand and he can't get matcha in New Zealand. And this is going to mean a lot to him. You know what? I want that person to come to me and say, hey, Mike, this is going to like a guy way overseas. Can you sign the bottom of the tin? Yeah, I can. Like, let's do it. So anyways, I'm looking forward to that journey. But let's get into our questions. First one we had was from Julian. Julian wanted to know, how was the move from doing what you were doing previously? So doing all the digital stuff, the creative stuff, and then just, and I'll tie this into someone else's question. Had you done coffee before? Or was this something that you were like, no, I've done this before? Or was it like, I just want to make a change?
I had not done coffee before, but I had foolishly thought that because I've been around so many coffee shops, I could probably do it. And I was super wrong.
Attaboy.
Mate, I never knew that. In my head, you were like, from like 3 years old, just making the banging coffee. Like,
no, I mean, I like, make a lot of coffee.
I love never that. Actually, I love that.
To be completely transparent with the few of you guys that are here, I didn't even know what latte was comprised of until we started. So just in terms of like who makes a latte, I didn't know. I'd buy them all the time, but knowing what it was. So hadn't done coffee before. The move from my previous career to this was scary as hell, to be honest. But what, like when I, because this was the dream, because this is what we wanted to do, I knew that when I had to go to my boss and say, hey, I need a little extra time on that project because I won't have time to get to it because I'm doing this. And he was like, I totally hear that. Totally understand that. That's when I started to be like, okay, now I need to take this seriously. And like, and then there was a window of time where it was like, I want to do honor to my boss, the company that I'm working for, and to sociology. And if I can, the only way I can do both is to tell Philip, who was my boss, that here's actually what I can give you and it can't be what it was. And then to tell myself and Linz at sociology, like, this is, I'm going to pour everything I can into this, but there's going to be some stuff that I have to focus on for my previous career until I can make it work. And that was pretty much like, that was the shift. Was I was just like, all right, we're, like I said before, it's going to be a huge risk. It's scary. But if it's in your mind and in your heart, you're saying like, no, this is it, then you will make it work.
Absolutely. All right. Next question is from Julio. This is definitely something I have dealt with since the beginning, which is, much of business is finding a way to scale up. How do you approach growth without losing the vibe and the feel?
That is such a good question. Yeah.
Okay.
Bring it on.
So here's what I would say. There's a shop, a donut shop in Portland. It's called Pip's Donuts. It's actually like world renowned. If you know donuts and you follow donuts, it's kind of funny, but, it's run by a guy named Nate, super solid guy, and his wife. And, they have one shop only and they have a line.
Sorry. I thought his last name was super solid guy. It's by Nate, super solid guy. And I was like, that's a freaking awesome last name. Yeah. What a cool surname. Super solid guy. Sorry, go ahead.
But it's right. Yeah. It's one shop every day. They have a line all the way around the block and people are always asking, when's your second location coming? When do you do? And his answer is like, why would I do a second location? Like we're killing it. People are waiting 30 minutes in line to get donuts. So for us, we've decided like we're just going to take scaling really slow and really be intentional about it. And if we were to scale, you know, for a coffee shop owner, there isn't really such a thing as scaling when it comes to making more coffee. Like you can only make so much coffee in a day, right? Like our machines, it takes time. It takes the same amount of time every time. So I can't just be like, we need more customers. We need to be open more hours. Like there's labor costs and all that, that you can't just throw, you know, more volume to it and make more money. But you could add to your ticket volumes. You could add merch. Like we add merch, people buy the merch. So you can scale that way, which is great. But for a coffee shop owner, the way to scale is to have another location really. And so we've thought like, all right, well, yeah, we want to think about that, but really that we wouldn't just go like, hey, let's go open another cafe with 10 staff and let's go, because that's not how our first one was built. And that's not why it was successful. So it's kind of like, how can we recreate what we had at the beginning and build that trust and build that momentum very slowly without burning ourselves out? Cause you know, there's a places we could go rent right now and start a cafe and find the capital for it and make it happen. But a lot of what sociology is, all of what sociology is creating that vibe. And could we do it at that scale right now? Probably not. So it's, yes, you can scale obviously. And that's a huge question, but it's really just being, prudent about what are we able to do and how can we build it in a way that is sustainable.
I always think like for me it's all about like scale versus longevity. Do you know what I mean? I would personally much rather, especially when it's something you care about, like Mike's Lessons.com and sociology and like Paragon, like yeah, growth is amazing, but like only until it kind of cuts the lifespan of what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? Like we have it with, so we sell shoes and then we've also got a membership for sneakerheads essentially. And we found that like there's a number that we don't want to go over. Like it's a Discord group and there's a certain number. Let's just say it's like 100 people for number's sake. Yeah, if we get 150, 200 people in there, we're making more money. Sweet. But the experience and everything about it and the feel for the members inside that group changes into something that we didn't want it to be just for more money. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I love that this episode is so good because it's hitting loads of things that I've been thinking about personally as well. And it's like, yeah, you can scale, yes. But what for? Like to make a quick buck or to actually like realize, you know what, this is great. Like it's kind of like teaching drums, to bring it back to drummers in some respect. Like, yeah, you can have a million people that you're teaching every single week. And let's say you're teaching like 15 people a day. I can't remember how many Mike used to teach. It's a crazy amount of people. But let's say it's just 10 people. But let's say like your maximum is 6 people a day. You know, those last 4 people are getting a 50% Eddie, a 40% Eddie, a 30% Eddie, a grumpy Eddie, and they're leaving with an experience the first people didn't get in that day. So it's like, yeah, you can make more money, but where's the line? Do you know what I mean?
Well, the other thing too is what's the real wealth? Is the real wealth money? Or is the real wealth coming home from sociology being like, what a day. That's the wealth. I promise you that. My drum camps... I mean, if you guys paid attention on social media, they sold out in a few hours, all of them gone. We could easily, and we have a huge waiting list now for other people that want to get into the camps. We could easily make them not 8 people, but make them 20 people. I could easily take over the building that's next door to me. It's always been offered to me. 20 people, no problem. I can't teach 20 people and give them the attention I give 8 people. 8 people is the max that I can keep track of 8 individual journeys in my head through the whole day, all 8 people. I know exactly where their skills are. I know what they're working on. I know who needs to be pushed. I know who needs to be kind of gently coddled a little bit. I know all that stuff in my head. Literally when we hit 9 people, I'm like, I don't know who any of you are. I don't know your names. It's over. And so it's like, but I literally AB'd that, you know, we started off with 8 campers. We went to 10. We went to 12, we went back down to 10, we went back down to 8, and I was like, 8's the magic number. And so but the wealth is not the camp income or the website income. The wealth is coming home to Amber and being like, what a freaking day. So check it out.
Tyler from sociology came down and jammed with the campers. And she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. And then like, you know, David Holbrook was there and he was jamming with him and they were trading fours. And it's like, that's the wealth. And I think when I think about sociology and the second location and the third location, and the 20th location, it does come down to like, okay, so Kyle, was your dream to be a CEO? Right. 'Cause that's what you are now.
Right.
You have a board of directors. And when people have come to us, literally, I mean, you've met enough of our campers to know we have some very eccentric, like, I worked at Apple for 10 years and I'm here at Mike's Lessons Camp. The first thing they say is like, do you know how much bigger this could be? And I'm like, I know exactly. My life would be over. Like, I always answer them with the exact same answer, which is, do you know how happy I am right now? I will not give that up for money. No way. And so scaling is right. But I think scaling, all the way back to Julio's original question, scaling to me, unless you're somebody that obsessed on like startup books and was obsessed with Silicon Valley and you want to flip your company, which none of us want to flip Paragon. None of us want to flip sociology or Mike's Lessons or Rudimental. Scaling to me is a feeling of like I want this to be something bigger. I want, and I know how we can do it the right way, but scaling should never be like, well, we're doing pretty good. Let's be bigger for bigger, just for sake of being bigger. It's like, why water it down? So, all right, let's get on to the next question. We're going.
Blaze has got a banger right there.
Okay, I'll get to, let me get to, this is a quick one just for Kyle. From TJ Martin, what's a good French press ratio? Lately, I've been doing 30 grams of coffee to 500 grams of water. Hope you're all having a great day.
French press, man. That's old school. No, that is a good ratio. It just depends on your grind size. Really, like the finer your grind, the more extraction you get from the beans. And so, yeah, if your grind size is good enough and you're getting a good cup of coffee with not too much body, where it's like feels thick and heavy and kind of too syrupy, then that's great. The steeping time obviously matters too. But yeah, man, good job, TJ. You're killing it.
Well, man, if we could... Wait. Involve some grind size chat into the old podcast. We know we've hit a new stratosphere. Freaking grind size. Yeah. Man.
Is the French press the cafetiere? Is it the same thing?
Sure.
Like you push it, you know, you put it in the the cylinder and you push it down. Classic Americans. You love changing shit, don't you?
We can't say the word you just said.
Yeah. I don't know, mate. I don't know. Cafetiere. What else is there? Let's change. What? Okay.
Hey, how about it? I mean, our boy from Bath, Kim Lee, and I got in a fight about pan chocolate, and he's like, "It's pan au chocolat," and I was like, "Yeah, I'm not saying that, dude." It's,
yeah, pan au chocolat.
There you go. You crushed it. There you go. You get an accent, you can say anything you want. All right, Eddie, why don't you take care of Blaze's question?
So yeah, Blaze, he said, he's asking, how do you know when it's time to take a big risk? When something you're wanting to do feels like, you know, it's worth doing despite the risk, basically. And I would say, mate, like for me, it's probably not like the best advice, to be honest, because it's kind of crazy. But when things start to feel irrational and you're okay, like completely okay with it, I think that's it. When like you're losing sleep over it, you're just picturing like what life would be with this thing and without this thing. And it's scarier to picture your life without it than it is with it, even though the risk is huge. Do you know what I mean? You're like, I've just got to do it. And like, sometimes you can't explain why or how, but yeah, I think when things start to feel irrational in an amazing way, which is really hippie of me to say. And probably like there's loads of mums and dads listening, being like, no, stay in school. But that's it for me, man.
You're literally on a video call with two Californians. You can go as hippie as you want.
Yeah. One owns a drum school and one owns a coffee shop. Do you know what I mean? We're chilling, baby.
The risk thing, because Eddie, you know the actual details of my new company that, you know, it's literally my own investment. And I think if you do any risk for the reward, it's already over. You're going to get wiped out because all you're focused on is like, well, it has to make this much money to be worth doing. The risk is like, if the reward is getting to do the thing, the money will take care of itself. It'll all kind of figure its own way out. But the reason to take the risk is because you can't imagine the world without this thing existing, whether it's sociology, whether it's, you know, the services that you offer at Paragon. I mean, honestly, my social media feed is better because Paragon exists because of the content you guys make. I honestly don't shop for, you know, Nikes, but every time I see your content, I'm like, man, there's this like style that oozes out of everything you create, Eddie. And it makes me just go like, oh man, I'm inspired to like go do that with Matcha, with drum lessons, with something else. What about you, Kyle?
Yeah, I don't know if I could say it much better than Eddie did. Honestly, it's like it being something that just keeps coming up, and you being like, you at a certain point, you can either push it aside and that's unhealthy, like keep pushing it, or you can embrace it and actually look at, okay, what will it take? Mm-hmm. You know, and if I feel like I have that, then I should try that. And there's ways, you know, risks are only going to get, like, each step you take on the ladder, the risks are going to feel bigger. But then when you take it and you're like, oh, like that was worth it. And then I'll take that one and that was worth it. So they start small, but start. And then, you know, you'll eventually be like, oh, okay, like I should be doing this.
Oof. Bro, next. Start small, but start.
Yeah, it's great.
That literally punched Nike's just do it in the mouth. Start small, but start. I dude, that is. Man. Oh, by the way, since it's public, this podcast, let me just ask you now. Kyle, can I have your permission to use the term fundamentals for our community at Rudimental Matcha? When you tagged that, the lady that's helping me make the website, she was like, fundamental, because we've been literally struggling, like, on our website, it says our community, our customers, our family. I'm like, we can't use family. That's the Mike's Lessons thing. Customers seems too impersonal. Fundamentals, stud. Thank you. Marketing genius.
Fundamental.
All right. We've got one final question. This came in on the Patreon page. This is from Harry Younger. He just said, I'd love to ask this live, but unfortunately I won't be able to watch live. So I've got a small drum YouTube educational brand, and I'm looking to build a course around my teaching subject. And I want to build the course around the brand, and I love creating content, but my audience is not very big. Would you wait for a bigger audience to release the course, or would you release it now, hoping it finds the right viewers and the right eyeballs? I'll tell you right now, Harry, I don't think there's, you know, I've always said, start small, but start. I mean, I've just always said that since day one. It's just like, it's like tattooed in Elvish on my left arm.
Man, I love it. Now you're talking about Carl as if he's passed. You know, wow, a good friend of mine always used to say.
A mentor, you know. Really. A mentor. start small, but start. So, but that really, good. My thought is this, Harry, like I've put out content since the beginning of YouTube. And of course, every 3 years, you're embarrassed by your content because the cameras have gotten better and we've gone from, you know, I used to make content for iPod Nanos. So keep that in mind. That was my aspect ratio. Now I'm shooting in 8K.
Yes.
So every once in a while, I just revisit and I refresh the content. I would absolutely say, Harry, do it right now. And then 2 years from now, watch those videos and go, you know what? I could explain that better. I actually don't even explain it like that anymore. My teaching is always evolving, and I refilm all the content on mikeslessons.com, which is literally over 1,000 videos. I refilm it every 2 to 3 years from start to finish, every single video. Cause it's like, I'm sorry, I've grown as a teacher. I think I can explain this to a camera better than I could 2 years ago. Yeah. Our video quality is better now. Maybe the lighting's better, but the explanations are better too. So I would say, Harry, definitely go for it. Let it build your audience, especially if you think that the way you're teaching in this subject you're teaching is establishing your brand because you're teaching something unique. Get on it right now. Don't wait.
Yeah, mate. I mean, I can't answer that better than Mike, because Mike's the content guru, mate. Do you know what I mean? I can't really do that question any more justice than Mike did. But I think, I think the moral of the story is just start. Do you know what I mean? Like I always used to say, man, Just start small, but just start.
Oh God!
You know what I mean,
I remember the first time you DM'd me, Eddie. You said, you know, I just got to start small, but I got to start. And I was like, wow, this guy's brilliant. Mate,
I think we've got a new title for the podcast. You know what I mean?
I think we need to get Scotty Johnson
to voiceover. Just start small, but just start. And we'll be good. We'll get our voices out of the intro. All right, to wrap things up, Kyle, brother, I know I'll see you, you know, later this week or whatever, but thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. I know it's a drumming podcast, so it's kind of probably a weird place to be, but
thank you very much.
We loved having you, man.
Yeah, mate. It's been amazing. And, you know, like, honestly, mate, if it wasn't for sociology, I wouldn't be coming back over to LA. Yeah, I'm not in LA.
Why are you going to LA?
I don't know. I've really mucked up the joke there.
You really did, because now there's people in LA that are like, so where is sociology? Oh, it's a 7-hour drive.
Listen, just, I know. You know, just start. That's all I've got to
start
say.
Start small, but just start.
Just start. But yeah, no, mate, you smashed it, mate. Sociology is amazing, man. And anyone around the area, even though we've spoken about it a million times and probably people are sick of us bigging it up, just go there, man. It's wicked. And I can't wait to just... Next time I come sociology, my goal is to not look as fat eating the sandwich. That's all I care about. Do you know what I mean?
He did us dirty, bro. He did us dirty.
But yeah, man, it was wicked.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you guys. For everyone that was in the chat today, all the patrons, thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thank you guys for supporting this podcast. If you want to support this podcast, you can always just go to wherever you're listening to this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, write a little review. That helps other drummers and artists and creatives find this podcast. If you really want to support this podcast and be a part of something amazing, head on over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie. But for now, episode 111 is in the can.
Ciao, ciao.
Done.
Boom.
Dude, Kyle, thank
Happy.
You. Oh, Kyle.
Oh.
I don't think he knew how this part worked. Kyle was like, later, amazing. I'm going to piss my pants, guys. You guys just talked for an hour and 10 minutes. Patrons, you guys are freaking amazing. Guys. That was awesome.
We had 24 people in there at once.
That was bananas.
That was crazy.
Patrons, you guys are the good stuff.
Good stuff.